This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. The competition is fierce when it comes to online streaming from Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Video, DirecTV Now, and well, the list goes on. What makes these services different and how is this competition beneficial to the consumer? Joining me to break down some of these services and benefits is Editor-in-Chief of Extremists, Rob Toledo. Thanks for joining me, Rob.
Thanks for having me on.
You know, there are so many streaming services out there, and I'm a little curious. Do you think that it's kind of oversaturated right now?
That's a great question. Last time I checked, there's at least a couple dozen in just the United States alone. And then around the world, I think there's like 200-something different streaming services, right, with, you know, sports streaming and TV streaming and movie streaming. And it's really, really gotten too complicated, I think. I just think there's just too many options where, you know, if I'm a consumer and I want to just watch a specific show, I don't even know where to turn anymore. You know, and there's become like this secondary, you know, industry now of like people who have built out like really thorough search engines. How do I watch The Simpsons online? And then it, you know, provides all these different answers for you. If you're starting out in the cord cutting world and you know, you're kind of looking to maybe start with one or two services and there's, you know, 25 options, good luck picking those one or two.
Now, do you think there's one streaming service ahead of the others, or a couple at least?
I think Netflix is kind of still the standard bearer. I think their most recent subscriber numbers also puts them above like 120 million people like on their service globally. Amazon Prime's up there too, I think, and they leaked some numbers that said they were around like 25 million active users of their streaming service. Hulu is probably the one I would say that has the most well-rounded offering because they are offering, you know, next day television. They have a pretty good back catalog. And then if you're willing to pay a few extra bucks, I think it's like $25 extra a month, they give you a live streaming option, kind of like their competitors, DirecTV Now and Sling TV, which both offer live TV. Hulu kind of has that all in one package, which is nice. Because one of my biggest complaints is, you know, when I log onto my Apple TV, I have to bounce from 9 different services to figure out what's on what. And Hulu, I think, probably offers the most in one place. But even then, I'd still say they probably only hit, you know, 60 to 70% of what I'm watching in a given month.
Now, I read this a while ago that Netflix, they're going to start buying theaters, or they already bought a theater. What do you think of that?
I think their strategy here is kind of more around their original series and movies and things like that, too. There was some rumors that they were going to be pushing their movies as like in their own little theaters to promote in award season. I'm not sure what the follow-up's been on that. I haven't seen one of them open yet, so I don't know if that's fallen through or what. But, you know, I know that they do a lot of small releases of their Netflix-produced movies, so they can try and qualify for the award seasons. But two things. One, I haven't heard much about that in the past couple months. And two, you know, Netflix has been pretty, they haven't really won anything on their movies yet. Their shows have kind of been their big winners in the Emmy season. But as far as like Oscars and Golden Globes go, their movies have kind of come up blank.
Now, with all these streaming services, you know, people tend to forget about movies. I know I do. But my cousin, she told me about MoviePass. And I know that you guys actually wrote an article about MoviePass. Could you explain a little bit about it?
Yeah, sure. I'll give like the 30-second background on it. So basically, the most simple way to think of it is just like this subscription service for movie theaters. And it honestly, when someone told me about it, it sounded too good to be true. You know, I think I pay like less than $10 a month. I paid annually, so I got a discount on that even. I got this credit card in the mail. I had to download a mobile app. Anytime I'm near a theater, all I have to do is go to the mobile app, pick the movie at the theater that I want to see the movie in, and then it sends money to this debit card that they sent me. And then I just use that debit card to go see whatever, you know, to see the movie that I selected, you know, all underneath this subscription service. And, you know, in 2017, I probably went and saw, you know, maybe 2 or 3 movies in the theater, and then I signed up for MoviePass at the beginning of this year, and I've probably gone to at least 15 or 16 movies since then. I love the service. I don't know if it can survive, you know, because MoviePass is paying full price for the tickets, and so, you know, all they're doing is sending the money to this debit card, you know, I'm not paying a dime to go see the movie. So, you know, if I go to more than one movie a month, like, they're losing money on me. So, you know, I don't know how long this survives, but I hope it, you know, goes as long as possible, and I'm going to enjoy it as long as it's around.
Can you use it for more than one person, or is it just like one person and then that's it?
It's one person per card and per account. And, you know, I think MoviePass actually has some pretty unique technology built around making sure that that stays the case. For example, you can only tie one car to one phone. So, and you also have to, some people, and I've experienced this, some of my friends on MoviePass haven't, you actually have to take a picture of your ticket stub. The reason for this, of course, being they just recently implemented a new policy where you can only see a movie one time in the theater. So, you know, there was a big uproar around this around the time Avengers Infinity War came out. You know, people wanted to see it 10 days in a row or whatever for whatever reason. MoviePass actually changed their policy right around that time, so you can only go see it once. And, you know, okay, well, people thought, well, you know what I'll do? I'll just go to the theater and I'll check into a different movie on the app, pay for a ticket, and then just go into Infinity War. Well, now MoviePass makes you take a picture of the ticket to make sure that you're actually going to the movie you said you would.
Wait. So is this for every movie? You have to take a picture of your ticket?
Yeah, only for some users. And I think I'm going to guess it has something to do with how many movies I've gone and seen on MoviePass. But you know, you use the phone app to buy the ticket, and then once the ticket prints at the box office, you just take a quick picture of it, and then it uploads it to your account.
Oh man, they're really like, hey man, you're only seeing once. That's it.
they're gonna prevent as much fraud as possible.
But why would it matter? I mean, if you're paying for unlimited movies, why would it matter if you're seeing it more than once?
You know, that's a great question. I honestly think it's a hedging tactic on theirs right now. I think I probably could have told you it would have been this popular, but I guess for whatever reason, they didn't think it would be this popular. I think they're just trying to maybe limit how much cash they're losing on a monthly basis. You know, there's been a lot of rumors circulating that this company is going to be gone in 6 months. And I don't know if that's true. You know, they've come out and said, you know, no, we'll be around for years. We have plenty of money in the bank. But, you know, I know for a fact that they're losing a ton of money on me. I think at the end of the day, I think they're going to end up, you know, either figuring out a business model that's a little bit more restrictive or going out of business, which would be really unfortunate because the service is fantastic.
Now, I know in your guys' article, you said that 82% of MoviePass subscribers have gone to a movie that they never would have directly paid for. Did you guys poll how many people went to see a movie and say, hey, I didn't like it, and just walk out?
So this is an online poll. So we basically, anyone who self-described themselves as a MoviePass subscriber, we just said, in the last year, or when, you know, as long as you've been a MoviePass subscriber, have you gone to a movie that you otherwise would never have paid for a full ticket for? The idea came from me and a couple buddies who all have MoviePass. We went and saw the new Tomb Raider. And, you know, I mean, it actually wasn't really that bad of a movie, but, like, there's just no way I was going to, you know, pay full ticket price to go see it. But because I'm a MoviePass subscriber and, you know, you get access to one movie a day, you know, it practically feels like you have to go to a movie to get the most money out of the service. So it's just like, I've seen so many movies that I probably wouldn't even rent or watch if they were free on Netflix. But because I like going to the movie theater, you know, and it's a fun experience and I've paid for this service, there's kind of like this weird incentive just to go. And, you know, we took this big poll and, you know, we found that was overwhelmingly the case that, you know, MoviePass has certainly increased the amount of people who are going to movies that probably otherwise would have seen, you know, considerably lower audience numbers.
Now, has MoviePass have any trouble with, like, the actual theater, like AMC Theater or even other ticket distributors like Fandango?
Yeah, there was a big controversy not too long ago. I think it's since rectified, but they're trying to figure out their monetization strategy here. And I think one of the first things that most people think is, well, why don't they just get the theaters to kind of chip into this game? You know, why don't they get the theaters to give them a small cut, basically so they can, you know, hopefully, you know, make a little bit more money than they are now off people. And, you know, because MoviePass, like I was saying, it's sending people to movies that otherwise they might not go to. Hopefully these people in the theater are spending money on concessions, which are a big high-margin item, you know, like popcorn and drinks. So MoviePass has gone to all these theater chains like AMC, Regal, and Lowe's, and, you know, Alamo, and have said, hey, we want you guys to subsidize some of this with us. And basically, they've kind of gotten laughed out of the room. So MoviePass, in an attempt to kind of swing some weight around, went to AMC and said, okay, we're going to block your 20 most popular theaters from people being able to use MoviePass at them. Well, you know, okay, that's all well and good, but there's plenty of AMC theaters and there's other theaters around. So, you know, okay, well, I just went to a different theater. There was one in the Seattle area where I'm based that happened to. And, okay, well, I'll just go to the other theater that's, you know, five blocks away or whatever. And so I don't think it really ended up making a big enough difference. And, you know, unfortunately for MoviePass, I think that was kind of a signal to the theaters, like, you don't have to take us that seriously because we can't really threaten you with much yet. MoviePass has not confirmed this, but this is the number that I've heard floating around, that MoviePass has increased theater attendance by about like 5 to 7%, which really doesn't sound like that much. So I'm a little nervous that, you know, they're not able to kind of negotiate these better rates with the theaters like they're hoping they would.
Now, what happens if the company fails? Do you think there'll be another one with the same concept? Do you think it's good enough?
I think there's a couple things to that. I think there's a couple competitors that's popping up. There's one called like Cinema, I think it is, like spelled like S-I-N-E-M-E-A or something like that. The other thing that I think might happen is a worse version of this service popping up through the theaters themselves. So if you're AMC, you go, wow, that MoviePass was really popular. Gone now, thank God. Can we do our own version of it? But maybe for $25 a month and only at AMC theaters or something along those lines. That's kind of where I predict this is going. I got to say, though, the subscription model to theaters has been awesome over the past couple months. So, as a consumer, I'm like hoping it works itself out. I just don't know how it's financially viable.
Now, I know you said you've seen a lot of movies using MoviePass. What's the one movie besides Tomb Raider that you were like, I would never have seen this?
Oh, I went and saw Hurricane Heist. I think the studio literally released that movie because of MoviePass. Because it was so bad. You know, there's big tanks rolling down the street and the hurricane's happening and the Federal Reserve is getting robbed. It was just a terrible movie, but it was so much fun, you know. And so, you know, I think that to me is just a prime example of you know, MoviePass doing its job.
MoviePass, it's saving all the B-movies.
That's exactly right. That's, I think, exactly what's going on here. Maybe if the B-movies could somehow figure out some way to subsidize MoviePass, you know, they might be able to stay in business.
All right, switching gears back to streaming services. Now, there are a couple of Netflix originals that were canceled. 7 Seconds was canceled. What did you think of that?
I have a couple thoughts on this, because I thought the show was phenomenal. Here's kind of why I think it was canceled. I think it just felt a little too real. You know, like, the themes that it was hitting on were just, you know, very dark and realistic themes, and it's kind of like what we've seen in the news lately, you know, a lot of this, like a lot of racial tension and stuff. And I just wonder if the show suffered from a little bit too much realism, and I think that, you know, people, when they're tuning into a show, I think oftentimes more than not, it's, you know, maybe a little bit more escapism. They want something a little bit, you know, more lighthearted or more ridiculously, you know, kind of, you know, fantastical. The other thing, my other complaint is I don't think the show was marketed at all. You know, I don't even remember. I think the last time the first time I had heard about it was when you mentioned it a couple months ago, and I'm like, wait, this is on Netflix? And I think just Netflix is suffering a little bit of, you know, they're releasing so much so fast that there's just so many shows that they just can't, they like quite physically can't market all of them, you know, which is unfortunate, because then you get a show like this that gets canceled.
Yeah, a bunch of shows were canceled too. Everything Sucks, which I tried to watch and I didn't like it, but still, I'm sure other people did.
Everything Sucks, kind of like the Freaks and Geeks of, kind of like a redo of that, it kind of felt like to me. There was a couple other ones too. There was one called Gypsy that had Naomi Watts in it, and that one got canceled after the first season. No, I didn't really like that show at all, the episodes that I watched. But it just goes to show that even like a star name, you know, can't hold a show if it's not marketed well in their service. A couple other kind of big name ones that got canceled was The Get Down. This was a cluster of a show, though. Like, it was huge, like 100-something million-dollar budget, and just, it barely made it through the first season. Like, there's a bunch of staff changes, and it just ended up being kind of a mess for Netflix, so they just pulled the plug on that one. Marco Polo was another one. This is kind of like, they're supposed to be their follow-up to House of Cards, on like big budget TV show, and I don't know if you watched any of it, but it was pretty rough. You know, and like, you know, they had spent millions and millions of dollars per episode on this show that was kind of supposed to be like Game of Thrones for Netflix, and it just never panned out that way.
Now, usually for those types of shows, Netflix will sit there and say, hey, we're going to give you 2 seasons. Boom. Now they're just like, no, if it doesn't do well, we're just, you're canceled 1 season. We're not even giving you a goodbye episode. Why did they change that model?
Yeah, I think that's a philosophical shift in the company. I think their CEO, Reed Hastings, has come out and said, you know, I want to fail more. I want bigger risk, take more chances on things. And kind of with that means, you know, we're going to see a lot of shows where they've spent quite a bit of upfront money and they're just going to pull the plug as soon as that first season doesn't work, which is unfortunate because sometimes shows take time, you know? Now, I do like the concept of moving and picking more content that might be a little riskier. I think the unfortunate reality of that is you might find like a really fervent base for a show, but if the commercial audience isn't there, then Netflix might pull the plug, which is just going to leave a really, you know, a small group of very angry people.
Now, Netflix is also doing reboots. You know, it's got Fuller House, Lost in Space, you know, all these cool stuff. Do you think that they should maybe go into the reboot arena then?
I mean, they're kind of already there, right? we've seen this, especially just recently, although it got canceled with the Roseanne controversy. But, you know, for whatever reason, consumer television right now is just shifting that direction. And I think it's easier, it's cheaper, it's familiar. You know, like there's a little bit less risk when you build out a show. Like, now, I have to say, though, when Netflix put out the concept of Fuller House, I kind of rolled my eyes a little bit. But it's turned, you know, if you believe their numbers, which aren't thoroughly published officially, but what their content officers have said is that Fuller House is one of their most popular shows. So it's like, okay, well, I guess I was wrong. You know, I thought this show would be a major flop, and, you know, but it turns out people love it, so go figure.
Yeah, I never liked Full House. That was never my deal, but I guess people just love Fuller House. It makes me wonder, should I just go and watch it?
You know, if you didn't like Full House, I don't think you're going to like Fuller House. I'll give you that much.
Yeah, but if it's so popular, maybe I'm the one who's wrong.
You know, I thought that, too, about the Adam Sandler movies that they always put out, and then I tried to watch a couple of them. I was like, nope, this just isn't for me.
One of the reboots out is Lost in Space. What'd you think of it?
Oh, man, I was so excited for this. I don't know if I was being a little unfair with my expectations, but I was a little disappointed. I think there was a couple things. I just didn't like any of the characters. Now, I don't know if that was the writing's fault or the acting's fault. I did enjoy Will Robinson. I'll give them that. But for whatever reason, just I might be one of those, you know, old curmudgeons who doesn't like the nostalgic reboot where it's not done perfectly, you know, so I might be a little bit biased against it here, but for whatever reason, I couldn't get into it in the way I was hoping I could. How about you?
I hated it. I absolutely hated it. There was nothing, nothing I loved about it, but I internalized when I was done, and I realized their problem was it was an hour episode, right? Yeah, I think it was an hour.
Okay.
So I think what happened was is that the characters were already bland. So the character development could have been a lot shorter. They could have done a lot of stuff in half an hour time instead of dragging it out for an hour. And that hour was just like, it was like a knife to the gut every minute after that half hour mark. And I just couldn't handle it. I actually didn't watch the very last episode. I went and looked up spoilers because I'm like, I can't even do it. I can't even do it anymore.
Good for you. Yeah, I think it's getting a season two. I this is relatively new news. They're getting a second season. So somebody must have liked it somewhere, or it might just be they've already been producing it, so they're just going to roll with it. But I haven't heard much. It to me, honestly, it kind of fell into like critical purgatory where, you know, some people kind of liked it, some people kind of didn't like it as far as the critics go. There wasn't really a strong force one way or the other, so I kind of have a hard time seeing this one making it past the second season.
Well, if they can actually get into the action, because now, you know, for those who haven't seen it, spoiler, now they're lost in space after season one.
Right.
Now they're lost in space. And I felt, like, really upset about that, I'll be honest, because I thought that they were lost in space already. No. The very last episode. That's when they're lost in space. And
That's right. It felt like a prologue, kind of. It wasn't like a first season at all.
Right. And that's why I thought this was too long. This is too long for it being, you're right, like a prologue. You know, having all these episodes, trying to develop all these characters when we already kind of knew who they were based on, you know, Lost in Space, the old, you know, episodes. And I don't know. It's if you were trying to do it brand new, they should have just took the whole thing and just redid it and made it Lost in Space in that universe. Or they could have done it future, you know? What was it like after everything? But to do it this way, it wasn't that great. But I love the graphics. Everything about it was good. Visually, it was fine.
Absolutely.
There's a couple of Netflix trailers. One that I saw was The Innocents. This show is set to premiere in August. What did you think about it?
Yeah, I really liked the trailer. Once again, I've been disappointed by plenty of Netflix trailers, so I've learned to kind of temper my expectations with their original stuff, but this one definitely looked interesting. Also, I got to say, I watched the trailer, and I'm a total sucker anytime anyone repurposes the Pixies song, Where's My Mind? So, you know, I'm watching the trailer, and the music's playing, and I'm kind of like, oh, man, this looks great. I enjoy the psychological thriller shows, though, so, you know, I'll certainly give this one a view. You know what it kind of felt like to me was like, if you liked Dark, you'll like this. That's kind of what I got out of it.
I did notice that the, you know, Supernatural and like Flash and Riverdale that normally would become available after the release of, you know, the DVD was available. But now it's like after the season finale, boom, you get it on Netflix. What happened?
I think there's a special deal there with the CW. I remember like a couple years ago they had a deal like that internationally. I'm not sure if it has moved to the United States in the same way exactly, but in a lot of countries they actually have, you know, direct to Netflix deals where show premieres and then like the next day it's available on the service. And I think that's a trend we're going to see more and more of, is kind of like the DVD sales have kind of dried up. Like, I mean, frankly, I haven't bought a DVD in like, I don't know, 10 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think this is kind of the new model. Maybe the studios have kind of determined, you know, hey, we can just make more money if we get more money out of Netflix to offer it sooner. That's probably going to make up for the decreasing, you know, physical copy sales.
You think it was trying to compete with Hulu?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's going on here. I don't know if you've seen on Netflix over the last, maybe like 6 months, there's been a bunch of shows that have popped up now that are like weekly shows.
Yeah.
And mostly they're like talk shows and comedy shows and stuff, so it's not sitcom or anything along those lines quite yet. But I do think this is the direction Netflix is going to kind of start moving, just to keep subscribers more engaged. You know, I don't think it's uncommon with Netflix to see somebody who's really active for like one day a month, or, you know, one day when a new show comes out, and then they pause their subscription and wait for the show to come back for next season, you know. So I think this is just Netflix's move to, you know, kind of prevent that churn.
Last but not least, I have to know, did you watch Cobra Kai?
Oh, I watched the first episode. We were talking about this last time.
Yeah.
I cannot believe how good the show feels compared to what I was expecting. I'm not a YouTube Red subscriber, so I have to get my own subscription. But the reviews have been fantastic. The internet is going crazy for it. And I was like, what?
I loved it. I watched all the episodes. I got YouTube Red for 1 month. Like, I already canceled it. I didn't want it anymore.
All right. I'm going to have to do that.
Oh, yeah. And I watched all of them. And I'm just completely shocked. This is what I wanted. It's not a reboot. It's just like a continuation of the story.
Yeah, right.
This is how I wanted Lost in Space to be. Like, honestly, like when you watch it, you're like, there's just enough character development where you don't feel overpowered and it's not underwhelming. It's just enough for me to figure out what they're like. And that's exactly how I wanted it. And it was perfect. And I can't wait for season two. I'll buy YouTube Red again for 1 month. But I can't wait.
Awesome.
Are there any new programs that we should be looking out for on either Netflix, Amazon, Hulu?
This is actually a pretty slow month. I think summertime coming up. It's typically most of those streaming services aren't going too big here, but for fans of Sense8, which is a Netflix original that got canceled, Netflix actually agreed to make a movie to finish the show, and so that actually comes out in a couple days here. The Last Jedi is actually available on Netflix this month, which I'm kind of excited about, to be sorely disappointed again after seeing it in the theaters. Hulu has this show that second season is becoming available, called Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. It's a BBC show. If you can get a chance, give it a watch. It's on Hulu. Really like surreal kind of comedy. It has Elijah Wood in it. It's just super fun. I really enjoyed it. And then Amazon just released a new original movie that I was excited for, called Wonder Wheel, which is kind of a 1950s mob movie, but also takes place on Coney Island, and it's kind of has like this interesting family dynamic. But it just came out this month, and then I looked at the reviews today, and I was like, oh my gosh, this thing is getting panned. So how excited I am for it anymore. But there's a couple for you to check out.
Well, thanks, Rob, for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
You can find us at extremist.com if they're curious about what's new on their favorite streaming services.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapaine.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.